Member Week is here at Lowe's. Don't miss your chance to get up to 40% off hundreds of items like paint, stain, tools, flooring, and more. Shop our exclusive deals happening in-store and online from May 8th through May 14th. Not a member? Join My Lowe's Pro Rewards for free today and get ready to save more. Lowe's, we help you save. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Here at Ritual, we know that a mother's support isn't limited to one day a year, and we believe that yours shouldn't be either. So this Mother's Day, we're honoring the world's biggest supporters with science-backed daily rituals that center you not just today, but every day. Whether you're thinking about motherhood, actively trying, or already there, we've got you covered for when it matters most. From fertility support and natal choline to our best-selling clinically-backed prenatal multivitamin, know that you're getting clean, traceable key ingredients in bioavailable forms. Because let's be honest, you don't have time for guesswork. Find your ritual. Go to ritual.com/podcast and for a limited time, get 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Based on net sales from industry data, including Nielsen IQ, Stackline, and Numerator, as of Q4 2024 in top five products.
Hey, everybody. We got a doubleheader for you today. I'm just so pumped to finally have Mayor Pete on the podcast. And yes, it's Mayor Pete because he actually follows the Hatch Act, unlike Kellyanne Conway. And so he was not on the podcast in his role as Secretary Pete Buttigieg. He was on the podcast in his role as a surrogate for Kamala Harris. As such, I was unable to confront him about my list of complaints about the construction on Claiborne Avenue, the new TSA machines, or any of my other issues, transportation department related, permitting reform. So we'll have to get to all of that another time. We also taped this Wednesday afternoon. And so at the end of the pod, I've got a bonus segment with A.B. Stoddard, where we cover the Eric Adams indictment, Kamala Harris's interview with Stephanie Ruhle, and racist Clay Higgins. So stick around for that at the end. But first up, my man, Pete Buttigieg. Hello and welcome to the Bulwark Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Miller. I'm just delighted to be here today with somebody that, you know, we've been a pretty big supporter of here. You might have heard of him. His name's Pete Buttigieg. He's just, he'll always be Mayor Pete to me. What's happening, man?
Good to be with you. How you doing?
No matter what, I feel like you could become president and you would still kind of be Mayor Pete. Is that possible?
I'll always gladly answer to that.
Well, you've been given a pretty important role, which is embodying J.D. Vance in debate prep. And we don't want to give J.D. any tips, so we're not going to go too deep into that. But I am a little bit worried about you from the Vonnegut standpoint of, you know, you are what you pretend to be. So be careful what you pretend to be. So just be a little careful.
I'm going into that headspace, but hopefully I'm going to be able to find my way back out of it. It's okay. It's interesting in there.
I bet it is. At the very end, I have one exercise related to being inside J.D. Vance's brain I want to get to. But before we do that, I want you to take a listen to what the man that you are embodying had to say about North Carolina gubernatorial candidate Mark Robinson's peccadillo, shall we say. Let's listen to two different times where J.D. had to answer about this.
Do you believe him that those were not his posts?
I don't not believe him. I don't believe him. I just think that you have to let these things sometimes play out in the court of public opinion.
A sex scandal in North Carolina is between the lieutenant governor and the people of North Carolina. They're going to make their decision, and we support them.
Very postmodern there. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't not believe him. I don't believe him. That's interesting. Maybe I could say the same thing of JD. I don't not believe him, but I definitely don't believe him when he says that, that he's not sure what happened out there. And, like, look, they've endorsed this guy, right? It's not like he's being asked to comment on some, you know, obscure Swedish parliamentarian. Like, this is their guy to be governor in a really critical state where they're also competing for the presidency. So, like, you kind of need to go ahead and stake out a position. And they already did, right? Their position, they endorsed him. So their position is, you know, this guy ought to be governor. And if you're not changing it, that's your answer, right? The answer is they're okay with this guy. And in a way, we shouldn't be so shocked, right? Because before he was describing himself as a Nazi on a porn site, he was already saying that, you know, some people just need killing and all kinds of other kind of shocking things. If that didn't put you off him, the things he was saying in public, you know, the things he was doing in private, while, you know, certainly even further out there, probably aren't changing the picture that much for you.
Your campaign, part of what I was alluding to earlier, is that you were trying really hard to reach out to these future former Republican types and have spoken about the change that we've seen in the party. It's pretty notable. These are the types of people that the party continues to attract. And like you're seeing it at the national level, obviously with Trump at the top of the ticket, but you're seeing it at the local level. I'm sure you're seeing this in Indiana and Michigan and all across the country.
Yes, but I would also say we're seeing some other things happening at the local level.
Okay.
Springfield, Ohio, you're seeing an incredible amount of decency from people who may not even change how they're voting, but definitely don't want to be associated with going after a vulnerable population. One woman who a phone call was traced back to her that she thought her cat had been taken, when she realized it hadn't,
she
had the decency to apologize to her neighbor. I don't know if that means she's changing her vote, but the point is we can actually be a lot more decent up close sometimes. And I also think that, you know, there are a lot of Republicans who are just as horrified by the kind of nonsense you're seeing out of whether it's Mark Robinson or Donald Trump himself. I wish more of them would speak up. But I don't think there has ever been a Democratic convention with as many Republican speakers as we just had. I guess I haven't gone back and run the numbers, but I cannot imagine that there has ever been a time when more Republicans have been willing to come over and say, actually, this time you got to be with the Democrat. A coalition that includes everybody from, you know, Dick Cheney to Bernie Sanders is really saying something. And my hope is that, you know, if all goes well, is, I know this sounds optimistic, but it opens up the potential that the aftermath of a Trump defeat, among many other necessary results that would come from that, would include a return to a comparatively normal Republican Party, which, even though I might not ever be a member of the Republican Party as an American, I think we need to have like a normal, healthy Republican Party that is as committed to democracy as the Democratic Party, so that that's not a partisan issue anymore.
I love that sunny optimism. I don't know that I share it, but I like the instinct. On this point, though, of these types of Republicans and reaching out to them, I have a game I ask usually the types of people you're talking about, prominent anti-Trump Republicans, and that I usually don't ask Democrats of this, but since you spend so much time on Fox, so much time talking to Republicans, I'm curious your view. What do you think is the most potent message to somebody that's listening? It's like, my dad or my friend, they're not a MAGA Republican. They're not putting on the hat, but they've been Republican their whole life. They didn't like January 6th. They don't like Trump's favor. What would your core message be? Like when you're going on Fox, when you're speaking to those people, what do you think is the most compelling?
I think probably the message for a lot of those folks is, look, for you, this might not be a policy election. So, you know, I think, look, a strong majority of Americans agree with Kamala Harris on most big policies. But of course, if you're a committed lifelong Republican, you probably don't agree with her on taxes or abortion or a lot of other things. We can go back to fighting about those things later politically, though. Right now, this is about something else. And I think, you know, when you look at the lead of somebody like, you know, Dick Cheney didn't just become liberal on, I'm guessing, anything, right? It's not like he's, by the way, neither is Liz Cheney or a lot of these folks. Like, they didn't change their policies. They just understand that there's something that transcends policy when you have somebody so profoundly unfit to serve running for president. I think that's the core. Now, a secondary message that I try to get out there, especially when I'm in spaces like Fox News, is about results. Because there's less of a difference between us and Republican friends in terms of the results we want to see than in terms of how we want to get there. For example, like Democrats want crime to go down, Republicans want crime to go down, right? So probably important for Republicans to know about the fact that it went up under Trump and then it's gone down under Biden Harris. You know, investments in factories in America, right? I think that's something that no matter where you are in terms of economic policy and populism and tariffs and taxes, whatever, pretty much all of us want to see more factories getting built in America. So worth pointing out that we had a manufacturing recession in the Trump years. That was before COVID, by the way. And we've got historic levels of manufacturing investment going on right now. So you go on down the list, even on things that, in terms of results, Republicans may be most focused on, and we can point to some pretty good results.
I'm sorry, I have to object to that, because I was listening to Donald Trump in Savannah, Georgia this week, and he's talking about a manufacturing renaissance that was happening with him. Let's take a listen.
We had created 650,000 manufacturing jobs before we even got ready to do it. And now we're ready. We're ready to do it. And the country's ready to do it. We need it. We have to have it. We need a renaissance. It's going to be a renaissance. But this horrific nightmare for American workers ends the day I take the oath of office, January 20th.
Chill down my spine. Is that not, that's not right?
If he thinks 650,000 manufacturing jobs is good, wait till he hears about the more than 800,000 that we've created in this last 3.5 years as a country. I think it's 1.5 million if you add up construction and manufacturing. So I don't know what he means by like, we're ready to do it. I don't know what, that doesn't make any sense. And remember, he always talks, as a lot of hucksters do, in terms of what's going to happen, what's about to happen. Yeah. You know, just give me a chance. It'll be like, you've never, it's almost become like this weird tick he has, right? Like, you've never seen before. It's going to be this thing like you've never seen before. We've never seen anything like it. You've never seen it. And I think, you know, folks have gotten like kind of tired of that, bored with it. But also it's like very easy to go back and check, right? There was a manufacturing recession before COVID under Donald Trump. Like, that's a thing that happened. It definitely happened. And right now we got levels of manufacturing construction. Like, I mean, where I come from, St. Joe County, Indiana, you know, the biggest thing to happen in the 50 years between 1963 when Studebaker closed and 2012 when I became mayor was this $1 billion investment in a steel plant. That was in 1990, and people were still talking about it 20 years later when I took office. Right now, we had a $4 billion investment in an EV-related factory in St. Joe County, Indiana, an $11 billion data and AI-related facility from Amazon, another one that's multi-billion dollars from Microsoft. Like, people know that's happening in their neighborhood. So, look, he's always going to, you know, talk a good game. It's what he does. He talked a good game about an infrastructure bill, but guess what? He didn't pass one.
Yeah.
So, you know, talk is cheap.
The stories kind of connect, right? Like the manufacturing story and the Springfield story. Like, why are people moving into Springfield? Like, why are some of these towns being revitalized and necessarily some of the jobs being filled by immigrants, right? It's because of the growth in the last 3.5 years.
Totally. I mean, this is another city that was losing people. I mean, they lost thousands and thousands of people in Springfield. Now, it can be a real concern and an issue when you have a sudden population growth, and coping with that really is a challenge.
Sure.
But I'd much rather have the problem of a rapidly growing community than a shrinking community, which is what they used to be. And yeah, the number, it's not like a bunch of people came in to compete for the same jobs. The jobs are growing and the population's growing, which of course, if you're the mayor of a city, that's what you're trying to have happen. Not without growing pains, but like, that's what you're trying to have happen. More jobs, more people.
I want to talk about one other issue that I hear a lot of complaints from, particularly from kind of the Wall Street Republican crowd, the 2%, like the kind of the high-end country club crowd. And that's this issue of unrealized capital gains. Now, I don't know if that's a big issue for the forgotten man, but Trump might have thought so. I want to listen to Trump talking about this issue the other day.
But more importantly, it's called an unrealized capital gain. You know what that is? That means that you're going to pay a capital gain even if you haven't realized it, even if you haven't sold. So a lot of people are rich, but they don't have cash. Now they're going to have to get cash, because if their thing goes up in value, they have to pay a massive tax. You're going to have deterioration. You're going to have a depression. If that happens, you have a 1929-style depression.
Okay. Number one, is this going to happen? And number two, how do people in St. Joe's County feel about the unrealized capital gains issue?
Yeah, I don't think this is a huge thing that's top of mind for the UAW workers where I come from. I don't think they're sitting on, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in unrealized capital gains. I also think, again, like, we've been here before, right? You know when else he said there would be a huge depression? He said there'd be a huge depression if Joe Biden got elected president. And of course, the opposite happened, right? Better economic growth, certainly dramatically better economic record than Donald Trump put up. So they always say this. Now, look, I think there is a debate about how to make sure that if you are super duper rich, you're paying at least roughly the same proportion of your income that like a school teacher or firefighter or a soldier is paying. Like, that seems important. The VP's put out what she thinks the just capital gains tax ought to be, not unrealized, but just plain old capital gains, lower than it's been in the past, but higher than it would be under Trump. And I think that's a way to, you know, if you're serious about deficits and you're serious about funding the things we're doing, it's a good way to strike the balance. I'm sure unrealized capital gains are a problem for a billionaire like Donald Trump. I don't think that's really something that's a huge issue in most working class communities in the industrial Midwest.
It's good to hear. It's just the realized capital gains for the three listeners that's a big issue for. You mentioned the deficit. So are we serious about deficits? I like that you mentioned that. You threw that in there. If you're serious about deficits, raising capital gains tax and others, you gotta look at some of these things. But it's hard for me to find anybody that's serious about deficits out there.
Well, look, I think there has been a bipartisan willingness to do a lot of deficit spending. I think up to a point that can make sense when it's to invest in things like infrastructure that, if you get it right, helps build up our supply side, helps fight inflation by unsnarling supply chains. There's a million other reasons why it's worth doing. But you need revenue. Like, that's part of it, right? You need discipline and you need revenue. We think more of the revenue ought to come from folks who are currently paying less proportionally than working class Americans. I think that's important. That's just like the kind of sticker rate, right? We also have to collect what people ought to be paying by making sure that a lot of rich people can't cheat on their taxes. And again, for the three listeners you have who maybe are very wealthy and cheating on your taxes, I apologize. But like, that's got to go, right?
Time
and
to pay, baby.
That's what the policies around like giving the IRS computer systems that aren't from the 80s and giving them enough personnel to do their job is about, right? I mean, clearly pays for itself in terms of revenue. This is not, you know, going after grandma unless grandma's running a multimillion dollar tax scam, in which case, like, sorry, but like she's going to have to pay too.
At Ritual, we're celebrating all moms this Mother's Day, current and aspiring. So whether you're looking for fertility support, natal choline, or our best-selling clinically backed prenatal, we've got you covered. Find your Ritual. Go to ritual.com/podcast and for a limited time, get 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Based on net sales from industry data, including Nielsen IQ, Stackline, and Numerator as of Q4 2024 and top five products.
I want to go to the other kind of side of the political spectrum. We've been talking about these, my people, in my case, the actual formers, but also the future former Republicans. But I want to talk about Chappell Roan. She's a very hot pop musician now. The gays, we knew about her first. She's had some questionable political takes lately about how she's been reluctant to endorse Kamala Harris. And I disagree with it, but everybody can do what they think is right for themselves. But in these videos, she said that you know, people need to do their own research on the administration's actions, particularly on LGBT issues. So I have a two-part question for you. Number one, do you have a favorite Chappell Roan song? And number two, for those doing their research now, can you help them brush up on what Kamala Harris can run on re-LGBTQ issues?
Sure. So the answer on the first one is I'm not cool enough to have a favorite Chappell Roan song. Everybody from my staff to Chasten are like trying to educate me. So I'll we'll see if I catch up.
Nothing? Does like if I said "Hot to Go," does that even ring a bell for you?
Yeah, it rings a bell. I'm just, you know,
not really though.
And it's clearly the right answer.
Could you hum it? Do you think?
Nothing good comes from me humming or singing. Yeah, that's just what I was.
All right, that's fine.
That's exactly.
I appreciate your candor. I appreciate your candor. All right, I'll go back to like, I guess what, Cher? What's your wheelhouse? I'll ask you for some classics
yeah, there
next
go.
Time.
Go
all right?
To the oldest.
All right, so just trust us that Chappell Roan has become popular while you've
no,
been
no,
you know,
I'm,
being
I'm,
secretary,
I'm aware that
and,
she's,
et cetera.
I'm aware that she's extremely important. So look, first of all, you know, we had a bill on whether gay marriage counts. We had a bill on whether if you're in a same-sex marriage, that ought to be protected. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris supported it. Most congressional Republicans opposed it. It passed because a handful of Republicans voted with the Democrats, and we got it. We would have a bill called the Equality Act, which says that you can't discriminate against people just because they're LGBTQ+, protections against discrimination, you know, on gender identity, sexual orientation. Kamala Harris is for it. Trump fans are against it. So like there's a super clear choice, not just if you're a married gay dad like me, but really across the LGBTQ+ community. I'm all for folks doing their own research. Check it out. And of course, the other thing that you don't have to go deep into a lot of research to discover is the way that Republicans in general and Trump fans among them have sought to score points by attacking some of the most vulnerable people in our society, like transgender students.
And drag bands. some of these states, like absurd, the free speech
party. Drag bans, book bans, don't say gay. I mean, yeah, free speech unless your speech is gay, I guess, is kind of what they're about. This is a real issue, you know, and it, look, I think if the fall of Roe versus Wade taught us anything, it's that when a right is established in this country, that doesn't mean that that right or that freedom or that protection is durable unless you defend it. And I think, you know, when you think about all the gains yet to be made and all the gains that have been made in the direction of LGBTQ plus equality, a lot is at stake in what's about to happen in this election 6 weeks from now. Not just Trump bans, but like closer to home, where a lot of these same people pushing book bans, drag bans, don't say gay are about to be on the ballot. And frankly, a lot of the most important decisions are made closer to home, the state legislature, a school board. So if you're doing your own research, research that.
It's a point that she made as well. So we have an alignment now between Pete all and right. Chapel and me. We all agree you should do your research on the local candidates. Shouldn't have needed to do that much research on Trump versus Harris, but okay, we'll give everybody a pass and, you know, we can grade it a curve. I will say one other thing on this topic, because gays can like sports too. I was watching college football this weekend, and the ads that the Trump people are running, targeting gays, non-binary Americans, trying to like turn the weird thing around, targeting individuals that, you know, have served in the Biden-Harris administration who are non-binary or trans, is like really gross and disgusting, the types of ads that they're running. So it's not, I mean, it's an active campaign targeting these groups from the other side.
Totally. I mean, this is not just like some obscure part of their policy platform. This is like a political strategy and a very destructive one.
Okay, another group that I want to talk to you about. You are, I think, famously the sort of go everywhere man. It was the sense of your campaign. You know, my girl Liz Smith was supportive of that strategy, but you're executing on it. You're doing interviews with hostile interviews, friendly interviews. There's like one place that Democrats aren't really going right now, and it's frustrating me, and that is the young male bro, if you will, podcast world. Like Bernie talked to Theo Von, and good on him. But like besides that, it's like basically zero. And I don't know if you're the right guy for that. Maybe you are, or if you can recruit some of your bro-ier colleagues. But like it feels like there's a gap here in the Democratic outreach, particularly when it comes to younger kind of 20-something men. And I'm not talking about the MAGA Turning Point USA. I'm talking about kind of the non-political bro-y kind of male. What can the Democrats do better there?
No, I think that's real. I think there's an opportunity to do more engagement, more outreach there, because I think we have a good message. Look, I think, first of all, anybody young, man, woman, gay, straight, like has the most at stake in what's about to happen to our society. Climate stuff, equality, a lot of issues there. But also, you know, I think it's important to arrive and share a little perspective on what it's like when we don't have the economic growth that, other than COVID, has been the unbroken experience of anybody who came of age, you know, in the last 10 to 15 years, right? I mean, if you weren't kind of an adult for the Great Recession, then you really haven't seen a shrinking economy. You haven't seen the things that could happen when you have that kind of, other than COVID, obviously. And COVID, I would say, is
like 9/11. Like if you're 25, you were two during 9/11.
Right. I mean, look, it's a little scary to think about, but if you're my age, you know, I'm thinking about 9/11. 9/11 is as distant for somebody starting college now as, you know, almost as Vietnam was for me when I got to college. Like it's a history book thing. Or it's getting to be in that territory. So we got to talk about things in a way that doesn't just like assume that there's the same like base of lived experience. It's a painful thing for millennials, especially elder millennials like me, to admit, but it's real.
Okay. Well, let's talk about it. I'd like to see you out there a little bit more. More, anyone really. More is more. I do feel like the Democrats have a miss on this demo. I want to ask you about another person we know in common. You went to college with Elise Stefanik. I used to work with her. I've been thinking about your kind of JD role play, and people, when they cite that you're doing this, they cite kind of your debating skills and like that you and JD are both from the Midwest and et cetera. But like, you also really knew Elise, right? And Elise and JD are pretty much the same. Like it's the same trajectory. And so I'm wondering if you have any insight on what's going on. Do you ever see her in DC? Like what's going on with that?
Yeah, I have not talked to her in a while, but you know what I'll say is, you know, there are a lot of people who really respected and appreciated and liked her while disagreeing on politics. You know, people, both Republicans and Democrats, who really appreciated her intellect. And it's tough with somebody like her or somebody like GD or so many people who you know better. Like, it's one thing if you're dealing with like a Marjorie Taylor Greene, who like, maybe she believes all that crazy stuff. I don't know. It's certainly plausible. There's a lot of people who know better, and we know they know better because they said so in 2015, in 2016. J.D. Vance eloquently talking about why Donald Trump was bad news. I mean, he didn't just say he was bad news. He said he was an opioid. Think about what it means for somebody whose entire identity is that you're from Appalachia, which is J.D.'s big thing, right? A place that is destroyed by opioids, to choose that term of all terms to describe Trumpism, to say it was an opioid, kind of a cultural heroin. I think those were his words, cultural heroin. He wrote this amazing, you know, back when J.D. was a Silicon Valley intellectual, he wrote this amazing piece for The Atlantic about Trump and Trumpism. So you know that he knows better. Sometimes you can even see the look in their eyes as their wheels are turning. And a lot of these members of Congress, like, you see it, because they figure out that their path to power is to staple themselves to a guy like Donald Trump. And when Trumpism passes, and I don't know when that'll be, I don't know if it'll, you know, be buried the day after Election Day this cycle, or if we'll be dealing with it for another generation. But what I know is when it passes, people like that will have a lot of explaining to do. And I don't know how they will account for their choices, even though the reasons for their choices are not actually that complicated or that interesting. It's just power.
Makes it hard, like, right? I mean, it's hard to envision like a beer summit with Elise when this is all over, right? It's tough just because of how ugly it's been, you know?
Yeah, which is too bad because I, you know, her friends miss her.
All right, we're moving to game time. We've got a couple just rapid fires for you. The first one, we'll do the role play first. All right. I asked J.D. Vance to come on this podcast. You wouldn't do it. So you've been playing J.D., so you're going to be the closest I can get. So I just want to just do a little prep here. So you're J.D. right now, and I'm who's doing the moderating?
CBS, right? Margaret Brennan, Nora O'Donnell, I think.
Oh, yeah, I'll be Margaret. I like Margaret Brennan. Okay, J.D., as your opponent just said, you once said Donald Trump was an opiate for the people that you claim to represent. You said that God wants better for us than Donald Trump. You said that conservatives know that mass deportations don't work. What are you doing here, man? What are you doing here?
Trying to be vice president at all costs, including my own dignity.
You're not revealing what you think his real answer is going to be.
No, but like, look, it's not like a strategic secret that he has this whole thing about how, you know, he came around, he bought into the media narrative, the false media narrative, and then he came around after he saw the results. But it's a profoundly ironic answer because, you know, as I've mentioned, on everything from crime to, you know, factories growing up in the Midwest, the results were not good, and they were definitely worse than the current administration.
I've got one more for you, which is JD related on the rapid fire front. You're pretty busy. You have the two children. You're a cabinet secretary. You're doing a lot of podcasts. You're out. You're prepping Tim Walz. So I assume that your seven languages, you're getting a little rusty. So my pop quiz for you is, are you able to criticize JD Vance in French, Arabic, or Norwegian?
Oh, wow. All right.
I'll give you three choices.
I think. Is that how you do it in Norwegian?
We definitely have a Norwegian listener that will be judging you.
Yes, sikkert at han vet bedre enn hva han sier.
Okay, well, I'm just going to have to wait for the reveal. I'm not going to have you tell me what you tried to say.
No, somebody can look it up. Tell me how it did.
Is there a key word that you want us to start with for looking up? Is there one key word, an English word in there that you're trying to...
Dårlig, that would be bad.
Okay. All right. We'll take a look at it. Final, let's end on a positive. You know, it's not a secret. So, we're just going to say it. I mean, I was more of a Shapiro or Buttigieg person on the VP list. Tim Walz has been pleasantly surprising me. Haven't got a chance to have him on yet. There's a lot to like about Tim Walz. You've got to hang out with him a bunch. So just want to leave us with, is there anything that has kind of surprised you about him during this prep, or kind of an insight you've got into him that you might not have had before you've had all this FaceTime?
I'm surprised by the Diet Mountain Dew. I didn't know that both running mates have that in common. A lot of Diet Mountain Dew going around. No, look, he is a very what you see is what you get kind of person. I got to know him a little bit through work before, but as I've gotten to know him better through this process, have found that, you know, and that, look, obviously this is part of his appeal, is he's kind of exactly who he says he is. He's exactly how he comes off. And I think what's really important about a guy like him with a career like his is, you know, he's chosen a career that you only can thrive in if you get that it's not about you. And, you know, that's what all these different, you know, as a teacher, an NCO in the military, football coach, right? A coach is measured by how well your players do. A sergeant is measured by how well your soldiers do. A teacher is measured by how well your students do. So what all of that has in common is it's not about you. That ethos is obviously less automatically abundant in jobs like, you know, governors and members of Congress. But I think he's brought that kind of spirit to those jobs. And I think that's what he's bringing to the ticket and what he'll bring to the vice presidency. So I'm an even bigger fan now that I've had a chance to get to know him well.
I love to hear that. Thank you so much for being on the podcast, Mayor Pete Buttigieg. Hopefully Tim Walz is hot to go next week. I'm going to be back on the other side with A.B. Stoddard. Stick around from that. We'll see you soon. Peace.
At Ritual, we're celebrating all moms this Mother's Day, current and aspiring. So whether you're looking for fertility support, natal choline, or our best-selling clinically backed prenatal, we've got you covered. Find your Ritual. Go to ritual.com/podcast and for a limited time, get 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Based on net sales from industry data, including Nielsen IQ, Stackline, and Numerator, as of Q4 2024 in top 5 products.
All right, we are back playing cleanup for Pete Buttigieg. It's A.B. Stoddard. What's up, A.B.? This is like the Mount Rushmore of Bulwark guests, that people are going to be going crazy.
Okay, so putting me after Pete? Like, what's that about?
So it's like when Doug had to learn that he was going to be speaking in prime time with the Obamas. He was like Barack and Michelle Obama and me. That's going to be the lineup for the night.
So Tim, I'm supposed to come before Pete.
Okay, well, I'm sorry, but I think that the people, when they see Pete Buttigieg on their app, they're like hoping for Pete. So we're going to start with Pete and then get to AB. There's a lot of AB material, though. We have so much to talk about. Since I taped Pete, like, the news just doesn't stop, you know?
Can we just talk about Pete?
Well, why don't you tell us what you think about Pete?
Yeah, my heart belongs to Pete. I know there's like a lot of people competing at the Bulwark to be the biggest Pete stan, but there's no one. No one's fingers I would rather have the nuclear button. No one I would rather have negotiating with Xi and Putin. I'm completely serious about this. I'm not joking around. I believe he's the most interested and disciplined and measured and prepared. He takes everything he does so seriously.
Yeah.
I just think his measure, he's not paralyzed by caution, but he's not arrogant. Where he is on that scale, to me, I just trust him as a person. And then I just think he's an amazing person. You know, my favorite Pete story, you know, the translation in the hospital anecdote, right?
Listeners might not, though. So
there's an ER doctor in South Bend, and there is a Somali boy who's very ill, and they need someone to come in and speak Arabic to the family, and they can't find a translator. And finally, a guy shows up in a nice suit and tie, and he helps translate to the family with the doctor through. And the boy's really ill. And then the doctor thanks him and says, how long have you worked with our hospital to be a translator? And he says, I'm not a translator. I'm Mayor Pete. You know, he never felt the need to, you know, whatever. All he wanted to do was help out. And I just, that anecdote is from years ago. We learned it in 2019 or whatever. And it really spoke to me about who he is.
You've definitely surpassed me on the Pete stand-up. I like Pete fine, but that is something. In your answer there, I didn't know where your fingers on sentence was going to go there for a second. So I was getting bit nervous about just how big your Pete stand-up. We got to the nuclear button. Yeah. I was like, phew, the nuclear button. Okay. I was getting a little nervous about where the podcast was headed. And you are much more earnest in your Pete love. I used in the last segment, my language gag was I asked him to insult J.D. Vance in Norwegian. So I'm excited to hear the Norwegian listeners
listener or two and let them know how we did. Okay, we've got three topics to bang through really quick. You get to pick where we start. Do you want Eric Adams? Do you want racist Clay Higgins or Kamala and Stephanie Ruhle? Where should we go? Dealer's choice.
Let's go with Harris with the interview.
I thought she was pretty good. I want to play. There were two clips that warmed my cockles. And so I just want to play one of those. Why don't we listen to Kamala Harris talking about housing?
For people who want to buy a home, yes, getting a $25,000 kicker would be great. But it's not just affording a home. We don't have enough in this country.
You're absolutely right.
And one of the main problems are regulations and rules, strict rules at a local level. How does the federal government cut through all that red tape and get down to, the suburbs of Pittsburgh and say, we're going to have to build some affordable housing here? How do you connect the two?
So you're absolutely right. So across our country, people rightly are concerned about the cost of housing. So it's home ownership, to your point. We need more supply. That is, without any question, part of the solution. Creating more supply under my plan includes creating tax incentives to work with the private sector and home builders. Part of my goal and the plan would be to create 3 million new housing units for rent and for ownership by the end of my first term. It includes also what we must do to cut red tape. You're absolutely right. It takes far too long and there's too much bureaucracy associated with home building. And I say that as a devout public servant. I know that we have to reduce the red tape and speed up what we need to do around building. And that is going to require working from the federal level with state and local governments.
I mean, she's coming right for me with that. That was pretty nice. Well, what'd you think? We're cutting red tape? Where the bureaucrats are standing in the way? And that sounds good. What'd you think about that answer, just the interview broadly?
Tim, you're so cute that you fell for the you're like the poster boy for YIMBY and you went for the housing. But I did think it was one of her strongest answers because she has a specific goal and she talked about regulation and the bureaucracy and it was specific. They need to incentivize. I thought it was really good. On the whole, I mean, you and I were together after her CNN interview and we were, I think, at the time, like high on relief.
Yes.
Is the way to best characterize it. I mean, we weren't exuberant, but we were like, oh, but looking back, of course, after last night, she wasn't looking at Dana Bash. She was looking down. She was nervous. It was a hideous set in the dark, as everyone has gone over. And she's behind Tim Walz.
Tim Walz towering over her.
I thought last night was, in the very beginning, she did seem, I got a little worried that some coconuts had fallen on her head in the first answer. I was like, no, girl, stop with the dreams and aspirations. And like, we got to land this plane. But then I think she did it. I really do. I'm happier with the outcome than I think like JVL and Mona were last night. I think it was more than fine. She had her politician-y answers. She certainly did that. She circled, back through, but she had her buzzword. She's going to grow wealth. She's going to reduce red tape. I thought her answer on steel was excellent. And she really was confident and she was ready. And she had given the speech that day, of course, on these initiatives and on these details. So but it's not like preparing for a debate, right? It is an exchange. And, props to Stephanie. She asked her challenging question after challenging question. It was not an easy interview. And so I thought that it was good that it was not an easy interview. And I thought Harris did a good job. And I think that people are not sitting there thinking, well, unless they're interested in one of those new housing units, they're not focused on every answer. What they really want to hear, I think, is like, they want a meta vibe that this woman is normal, confident, looks at the camera and has plans. And she's ready to talk about those plans.
Correct. I totally agree, by the way, with Stephanie. I thought it was a very well done interview. Here's one of the areas where she challenged Kamala, and it was another one of the answers I liked. I want to listen to them talking about tariffs.
Donald Trump's sort of big idea is this broad-based tariffs across the board. You and many others have said that would be not only disastrous, but it would be a direct tax on the American consumer.
It would be a sales tax on the American people. The independent economists have already measured this by the sales tax of doing a 20% tariffs on all imports that he has described would be a 20% sales tax, in essence, on basic necessities for the average American worker, average American family, totaling almost $4,000 a year. That is no small matter. Here in Pittsburgh, when I'm talking to a group of folks who work here, who live here, and when they hear it might be $4,000 more a year for them, look, people can't afford that.
But tariffs aren't unique to President Trump. President Biden has tariffs in place. He's actually looking to potentially implement more. Where do you come out on? Is there a good tariff, a bad tariff?
Well, part of it is you don't just throw around the idea of just tariffs across the board. And that's part of the problem with Donald Trump. Frankly, I'm going to say this in all sincerity, he's just not very serious about how he thinks about some of these issues. And one must be serious and have a plan, any real plan that's not just about some talking point ending in an exclamation at a political rally.
I like the substance of this. I also like how she flips it on him, right? Like their argument against her is she's not serious. She isn't given details. She's like, no, actually, that's not true. Like what his BS is the stuff that's not serious.
I agree with you. I liked the way she called him unserious, went to him at the rally. I just was talking about this with Bill yesterday. I want her to hone the tariff response because I think it's a gift from Trump. This is his only answer to everything.
Yeah.
I want her to break it down better. I don't like Trump. We were talking about that. Remember when she called it the Trump sales tax? I think in her convention speech, she's used it before. People don't understand it. They don't know if he actually introduced something like that. And I want her to say, when you go to Walmart, like we all do, and we buy Chinese goods, which we very much do, and there's a 60% across the board tariff on Chinese goods, this is what you're going to pay, you and me. I just want her to hone that and make it more explicit and digestible, because it's such a gift that his response to everything is tariffs. He has no idea what he's talking about. It also puts Republicans in an uncomfortable corner. They're all opposed to his tariffs, including Rand Paul. And they're pretty, when asked about it, they're like, yep, they're inflationary. I mean, they're pretty blunt about it. So it's kind of a twofer, right? And so I feel like it's such a gift. I want her to have a punchier line on tariffs.
I agree. That's good feedback. Yeah, I mean, it is. I'm glad she's starting to punch on it. I understand there's a reticence of like, tariff is a kind of a complicated word.
Yeah.
You know, you hear tariff and some people's mind starts to turn off. So it's like, I'm going to call it a sales tax instead. It is the issue where you're looking for in politics things that divide the other side. You know, that wedge the other side. That's why it's a wedge issue. And like, this is one. So lean into it and have a little fun, make fun of him. You know, like we're going to solve all of our problems with Donald Trump's magic tariff, you know, and crypto.
Pay for childcare.
We're going to pay for childcare, the debt. You were to solve your loneliness, everything just with these magic tariffs. Right. Any other thoughts on the interview?
No, just more of them. She's hitting her stride. You know, I'm just really happy to see it. And I want her to get out there. I think I like what they're doing. I like the non-traditional media, you know, the podcast, whatever. I do like that. But throw in some of this stuff so people just keep hearing plans, plans, plans.
Yeah, I got to listen to all the smoke yet with the Golden State Warriors players. I'm excited to listen to that podcast. Okay, Clay Higgins. This guy is a piece of shit. There's an old clip going around of him where he was like, I really like my homeboy, David Duke, but I guess he's kind of a Nazi, so I have to be, I'm more for Buchanan or something. I'm paraphrasing, but to give you a sense of how my fellow Louisianan Clay Higgins sees the world, he was all in for David Duke, just like right up to explicitly saying that he's a Nazi. Like that was the red line for him. Here's Clay Higgins, sitting congressman. LOL. These Haitians are wild, eating pets, voodoo, nastiest country in the Western Hemisphere, cults, gangsters, damned if they don't feel all sophisticated now, filing charges against our president, MVP. All of these thugs better get their mind right and their ass out of our country before January 20th. That person is a congressman.
So at the live show in last November in D.C., you were emceeing and asked, who's the worst person? And I actually said Clay Higgins because he had just at a Homeland Security hearing brought up the ghost buses conspiracy that he's come up with, sitting up there with the other members and like asking, you know, Mayorkas or some official, I can't remember, Chris Wray from the FBI might have been there. Anyway, it was insane. But he's literally a danger. I mean, not only is he a complete and utter loathsome thug, he is a monster. He has a checkered past in law enforcement where he has been forced to resign once as a patrolman in Opelousas for using unnecessary force, and then again later on for lack of discipline and lack of professionalism. But he, I think, in his time in the House, not only last year, like grabbed and shoved a protester outside the Capitol, but was, I think he did a podcast in a 3% or Oath Keepers t-shirt, like talking about how the 2020 election was stolen. He is literally a danger. And the reaction from Republicans on the Hill, Tim, just, I'm out of my mind. Makes me so angry. I know Mike Lawler's in a frontline seat in New York that Biden won, and he's got a huge Haitian community, and he spoke up and said that they're wonderful people. But, you know, Byron Donalds had a productive conversation with him, and they agreed it was a bad tweet. And Mike Johnson is the Speaker of the House, who said that his friend is a frank and outspoken man, but he's a man of principle. So once he urged him to go to the corner of the House floor and pray on it and decide that he regretted it and take it down, everything's going to be fine because we believe in redemption. Not holding to account members of Congress who are threatening Americans and who are racist, lying thugs.
Yeah.
It's just beyond belief.
I don't have much to add to that. You pretty much nailed it. I guess my only other thought is the praying on it thing really bothers me. And Mike Johnson actually didn't say that he regretted it. He said that he prayed on it and he deleted it. Maybe. Did he say regret? I guess Clay Higgins hasn't said he regrets it or he apologizes or anything.
Because Clay Higgins wanted everyone to know yesterday he doesn't respond to threats.
Yeah. Is there a worse advertisement for Christianity? Yeah. Mike Johnson just pretending to be all, you know, religious, talking about how we prayed on this just despicably hateful, racist tweet, and like everything's okay now. It's just like, this is, come on. These people are gross. All right, Eric Adams, was there a more predictable indictment in history than Eric Adams? I mean, this guy screamed the SDNY as soon as he won that mayor's race. They were licking their chops. Oh, man, this guy. So it seems like this is related to the investigation around Turkey and taking foreign money. I should note that Turkey also gives money to the Trump family. So I don't know that we have any, I have any big thoughts on this besides the fact that that deep state, you know, that really weaponized the government against Donald Trump keeps picking off Democrats too. Menendez, Adams.
Henry Cuellar,
yeah.
And Hunter Biden.
And we can't forget Hunter.
There are so many things, maybe we should like write up a piece about this. There are so many things that Harris and Walz should not be saying, but that other high profile surrogates should be saying around the clock. And this is one of them. The justice is blind,
yeah.
That the Democratic Party is holding lawbreakers to account, and a bad guy's a bad guy. It doesn't matter what party they're in. And
Harris could say that. That's great. That's great.
Like the voters don't have to value this principle. I want them to, but they've let me down recently. But I still want someone shoving it in their face.
Yeah, same. And hopefully the DNC, DSCCD trip can be on this. I'm curious where you mentioned Mike Lawler earlier. Nick LaLota, John Avalon's running against Nick LaLota. Our friend Elise Stefanik, which we talked about in the last segment with Pete. Where are they on this? I traditionally, you'd expect Elise to be the first one out talking about the corrupt Democratic mayor It shows you all the Democrats, but you can't do that. You can't do that when you're supporting somebody that's been indicted in four different jurisdictions. So it is interesting to hear that. I want to leave everybody with a little comedy. A little levity. Have you heard the worst answer that a politician has ever given in an interview? It was by Eric Adams. Have you heard this before? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, but I'm so excited for this.
This was Eric Adams last December talking about a New Year's resolution.
Mr. Mayor, we've come to the end of what was a very eventful 2023, right? So when you look at the totality of the year, if you had to describe it, and it's tough to do, in one word, what would that word be and tell me why?
New York. This is a place where every day you wake up, you could experience everything from a plane crashing into our trade center to a person who's celebrating a new business that's open. This is a very, very complicated city, and that's why it's the greatest city on the globe.
He's asked to give.
I really can't believe I've never heard of that. Wow.
He's asking him one word to describe his year. He gives a two-word answer, to be technical, and then immediately pivots into 9/11.
You could have a plane crashing into a building, or you could open small business. That is really stunning. Tim, I have to admit, I was really into Eric Adams in the beginning. I fell for it hard. Like, I just loved him.
I was a Catherine Garcia man. Vindication for Catherine Garcia. I liked that Eric Adams. There's one thing with Eric Adams that maybe Democrats can take a lesson to is hopefully there's a Democrat out there that can speak to working class black and brown people that is not Eric Adams.
That's right. That's pro police.
Yeah, right.
I really, and he has a certain charm, you know. I really liked that he was a voice in the Democratic Party for law enforcement. So it's really sad for New York, which I'm from New York. It's going through a little bit of a rough time, New York City, and just watching all these people quitting around him and knowing like that this was so widespread. It's just terrible, but I hope, like you said, someone else sort of surfaces that can talk about crime and cops in the way that he did and be like,
being a criminal themselves.
Right.
Doesn't seem like a high bar.
Yeah, I know. But Democrats aren't allowed to have criminals, only Republicans. So that's sort of like a new reality. And, you know,
the Republicans in New York will now be rallying to Eric Adams' side to see his poll numbers skyrocket like Donald Trump's.
They better be.
A.B. Stoddard, a delightful bonus segment on the Thursday Bulwark podcast. We'll be talking to you soon. Everybody else will be back tomorrow with an old friend. See y'all then. Peace. Podcast is produced by Katie Cooper with audio engineering and editing by Jason Brown.